Can you hear me okay? Thank you for inviting us. We're excited to be here. Appreciate so very much that you're interested in evangelism. And by the way, the food was great tonight, so thank you for that. I am Bob, and this is David. We're from the Northwest Congregation in Lawton, Oklahoma. And I want to thank Melanie for all the hard work that she did in kind of getting us organized, getting us together, and there's a lot of phone calls and a lot of communication, and it just worked out great thanks to Melanie. And I also want to thank Ron and his wife, Kathy, for picking us up at the airport. It was a great help, and we certainly appreciate all of that. So thank you for coming tonight. I do want to say that the things that we talk about are things that many of them we have borrowed off of some other congregation. We didn't just dream it up. And we're always looking for new ideas. We're all in this together. The information that's in here, we don't just talk the talk, we walk the walk. The Northwest congregation does these things. And a congregation of about 250 people last year, or we average baptized about between 200 and 250 people a year. So it's a mindset with us. We really believe in it, and our membership works in it. And these are some of the things that we do, and we hope they're useful. David?
I'll do a mic check. It sounds like I'm coming across well. Can everyone hear me? Okay, great. I'd like to also just real quickly kind of reiterate what Bob said in thanking each of you for being here tonight. I do want you to know this about myself and Bob. We are not preachers, full-time ministers, anything like that. We're just like probably the majority of you. Both of us are self-employed. I have a lawn care and tree service business. Bob has a real estate business and an insurance business. So I say that to tell you this. We're both extremely busy. We've got our families and we've got our jobs and all of those things. But there's no place that we would rather be than with you this weekend. And that's a fact. We really do mean that. Because we believe that there's nothing more important than going to heaven, reaching our goal of going to heaven, and taking as many with us as we can get there. And in this busy world of going here and running here and doing this and doing that, sometimes we lose focus on that. So it's times like this when we get invitations to come and to present those things that we've learned and, as Bob says, that we actually use in our various ways of trying to teach the lost, we really get excited about coming. And really, there's no distance that's too far. We've gone to Europe to do workshops just like this, and we've gone as short a distance as across town or to Cache, Oklahoma, which is only 12 miles away. So thank you again for letting us be here. And as we go through this presentation tonight, we'll be covering what's on the screen. You see, keeping the saved saved and practical local evangelism. That's what we're going to discuss tonight and share with you. Tomorrow, we're going to actually have a workshop, 2.5-3 hours right in there, and it'll be a real informal type situation where we will actually share with you the safety chain method, the method that we use, the method that I learned back almost 40 years ago, and literally just completely turned around and changed my life, as it has so many others in evangelizing. So we're going to share that with you tomorrow. And as Bob said, you know, there's a lot of methods and a lot of ways to share the gospel, isn't there? The key really is just find one that works for you and do it, you know. This just happens to be one that works very well for us. Bob mentioned that we are blessed to be able to baptize 200, 250 people a year. That's a combination of using this method in our prison ministry. We have a Fort Sill ministry. We do door knockings there in Lawton. And then we go on a week-long campaign to spend a week somewhere and do this. This year we're going to Texas, San Angelo, Texas. Been doing that for a lot of years. So anyway, what we want to do tonight is we want to talk about a subject that's just as important as teaching the gospel. And that is keeping the saved saved. And then we're going to talk about some practical local evangelism ideas and things we use. But keeping the saved saved. You know what I mean when I say that, right? Once someone has been baptized into Christ, they've made that decision to put Christ on in baptism, they've repented of their sins, they've changed their life, they go down in the water and they come back up a what? New creature, right? A new person, brand new. They look the same. You know, they probably will act somewhat a lot the same. But in God's eyes, what are they? They're His child, right? They're a new Christian. And we're going to talk about tonight how to keep new Christians growing and faithful. Some ideas on that. As well as some older Christians, that's people that's been Christians for maybe years. And they, what? Drift away, right? Let the cares of the world or whatever the reasons are pull them back into the world. Does anyone know people like that? Unfortunately, we do. And the thing is, sometimes, sadly enough, we don't know what to do or we haven't done anything or it's like, you know, whatever happened to so-and-so. So that's what we want to talk about tonight. Northwest, about 37 years ago, decided to take 25 or 60 members somewhere and spend a week on a campaign. And we, like I say, we've been doing this since 1976. That's a long time. And as a result, a lot of people have learned this method. You know, and those are some of the cities or some of the towns, rather, that we've gone to, or the states, rather. We do a lot of workshops just like this one. We get invited and we just schedule and we come. You know, we have no charge. We don't charge nothing for this. Nothing. You know, we ask that the Bibles, you know, be covered and paid for. Sometimes our transportation, if people can, you know, if the congregation can afford it. But we'll come. Because the end result isn't, was it cost? It's how many people can be empowered and maybe learn a way to teach and go out there and teach, see? And that's why we do it. Okay. On the packets that you have, there's a page number up there at the top. You can follow along. Everything I'm going to be talking about and Bob's going to be talking about, by the way, we'll be switching back and forth here so that, you know, if you get tired of me, maybe he'll be a new face to look at and laugh at. But anyway, we'll be switching back and forth and the page numbers are there at the top. You can make notes on there, but really, tonight probably isn't the night you want to make notes. That may be more tomorrow. But let's talk about keeping the saved saved. Local evangelism methods and teaching the gospel the safety chain. That's kind of what we're going to be talking about tonight. And in that packet, you'll see some resources. You know, where we get all this stuff. Okay? So, you know, you want to reprint that or go to some of that, you can go to there and there it is. Okay. When we start bringing new Christians in the front door, what happens often? Where do they go? Out the back door. Yeah. There's always a back door, right? And sometimes they go out the back door. And what we've got to try to figure out is a way to keep them from going out the back door. Right? So, the challenge for new Christians is different than it is for those who are mature. And when I say mature, those who have been Christians for long enough to where they've been able to grow, maybe be involved in some things, and for some reason they end up falling away. New Christians, when someone's baptized into Christ, as I mentioned, they go down in the water, they come back up, they're a changed person, right? In God's eyes, they're now, rather than being lost, they're what? Saved. Yeah, rather than being an alien, what? They're a child of God, right? But nothing miraculous happens to that person in terms of where they live, what kind of lifestyle they've been living, what kind of friends they've had, right? They still got those kinds of things. So new Christians are different than mature Christians in terms of knowledge. You know, they're not going to know God's Word the way maybe mature Christians know because they haven't been studying it maybe. Dress, they're going to maybe dress differently. I mean, Christians certainly should dress different than what? The world, right? We see that all around us. So, you know, they're going to dress differently. Their behavior, just because they've become new Christians, does that automatically mean that they have behavior changes? It doesn't. You know, we all know that. And then friends. They've got the same set of friends tomorrow that they had what? Today when they were baptized into Christ, see? All right? So, when you have, and when we, let me just put we, because Northwest, this is something that a few years ago, we really said, the elders at Northwest said, look, something's got to change. You know, we're doing a pretty good job evangelizing, but we're not doing a good job at all keeping the saved saved. So the elders put together a program after looking at a lot of different things and started making some efforts towards that. And these are some of the things that we have decided. So when someone becomes a new Christian at Northwest, we ask ourselves, is that person first there? If they're there, are they sitting by themselves? Right? If a new Christian is sitting by themselves, what does that mean in their mind? It's not good, is it? It's something pretty negative in their mind. We can't know what they're thinking, but we know it's not good. Do they stand uncomfortably in the foyer while other groups sit, friends sit and visit and talk while they're kind of off to themselves? Have you ever seen that happen? It's happened at Northwest. Does it happen intentionally? No, it doesn't. But we get all busy, right, after services or before services, and we're talking to those that we are our friends, our Christian brothers, and we haven't seen all week, and we're glad to see them, and what happens? The new Christian who hasn't yet made those friends is kind of isolated, see? So we try to make sure that doesn't happen. Associate primarily with their non-Christian friends. If a new Christian is baptized into Christ, they're going to have friends outside the church, right? Who are they going to continue to associate with, right? And who are they going to be influenced mostly by? Those they associate with, okay? And they'll continue to cling to denominational practices even after they've been baptized into Christ. If, let's say, they were, say they did have a religious background, but they learned the truth. They were baptized because they knew the truth, learned the truth. But they have these other denominational, what, tendencies, right? Because this is what they, maybe the, how they were raised, their friends, whatever. So those are the tendencies that they're going to continue to have it. So what do we do about it? That's kind of the question. These are the facts. When someone is baptized into Christ, I mean, this is the real picture, right? So if we know that's the real picture, what are some things that we can do about it? Well, are you uncomfortable with them? Whenever they sit in our pew, do they get a dirty look? You think, man alive, would anybody do that? You know, would anybody give someone that's sitting in their pew a dirty look or ask them to move just because they're sitting there? Would that happen? I think it would because it happened to me. I wasn't a new Christian. I was visiting, me and my wife, we were visiting a congregation. And we were early. I mean, we walked in and We were actually going out of our way shaking people's hands. And nobody really wanted to visit with us much. So we made our way into the auditorium and sat on the pew. Where does everybody normally like to sit if there's an empty spot? On the end, right? That's where we sit. On the end. And we're sitting there and people are visiting and talking and whatever. And hardly no one's coming up to us. Except one person. A lady comes up and I'm sitting on the end of the pew. I'm sitting on the end of the pew like Bob. And say, this is the end of the pew, right? And there's a person standing just like this. And I get this feeling like someone's there, so I look up like over my shoulder and she's peering down at me. And, I said, hi, and smiled, and she didn't smile or anything. You know what she said? You're in my place. So help me that happened. You're in my place or spot. I can't remember one of those two. My wife liked to choke. I said, well, I'm sorry, and I started scooting my wife down. She was shocked. So we scooted on down to the center, and that lady sat there and never said a word to us. What if I would have been a new member? How would that have made me feel? See, little things, we laugh and we think, that would never happen, but it does happen. Okay? These new Christians, we know they're new. Do we just say hi and keep on going by? Do we ignore them? Do we ignore them while we're spending time asking our friends to lunch, or do we take them to lunch? These are some things at Northwest that we have really trained our congregation, not because they didn't want to, but get this mindset. See, so when we have a new Christian, these are some of the things that we try to do, and guess what? It does make a difference. Okay. How about this one? Snicker when someone says something funny in Bible class, a new Christian, you know, or give that look. Maybe we don't think they're looking or what, but because their knowledge is way less, or they come from a denominational background or something, and they make a comment that's, you know, that we as mature Christians know better, but they make a comment and then it's like, can you believe they said that, you know? They hear that. What do you think that causes that person to want to do? Not be a part, right? They don't feel welcome. These are little teeny things that we have discovered, by reading other things and asking other people. And these are the things that we've really, you know, tried to focus on, and it does make a difference. Okay. Do we just let them, you know, slowly fade away until they stop coming? Does that happen? It does happen. You know, nobody notices. You know. So if all of these things happen, if I were a new Christian, if you were a new Christian, if you learned the truth and you were excited about learning the truth and you were baptized into Christ, knowing that your sins had been washed away, knowing that you were a new child of God, because that's what the Bible taught you. You read it and you learned it and you were excited about that. And then you went to a worship service and you got treated this way. Maybe not intentionally, but you got treated this way. You personally, would you want to stay with that group if you were treated that way? Would you want to stay with any group that you're treated that way? None of us would. So if that's the case, we just take a step back and we think about it. And at Northwest, that's what we've done, and it has made a difference. It has made a true difference, and we're going to share some other things with you tonight. All right? Of course, the Bible teaches us that we certainly shouldn't act this way. You know, I said a second ago, we're here, and Bob and I are here because we want to be here. You know, we're not being paid to be here. Nobody's forcing us to be here. We're here because we want to be here. Because we want to go to heaven. And we want to be in heaven. We know we're going to be in heaven with all of you. See? That's who we're going to be in heaven with. So that's where we want to spend our time. And when we have new Christians, we should want to take and develop them and mature them and help them to grow and to bring them along so that, why? They can be in heaven with us too. Right? Okay.
I noticed that this congregation of very friendly people, and they were friendly to David and me. Let me ask you this. How friendly are you with visitors when they come? You know, we really think that we're friendly because we're friendly to each other, all of our friends. But sometimes we don't really realize that we don't include that visitor in that group. Have you ever gone to a congregation where people were not friendly to you? Do you want to return? I went to a congregation in Oklahoma City not too long ago, and I'm kind of an outgoing person. And it was almost like that people did not want to talk with me. They never said more than one word if when I introduced myself. Nobody was really friendly. And as my wife and I left after service, I said, well, let's just mark this one off. We will not return here. And I think visitors do the same thing, do they not? This becomes a mindset. You have got to really develop this set of looking for visitors and including them in your worship and in your circle of friends. We have found this to be true. Done a lot of research, read a lot of information. But to remain faithful, a new Christian's got to do all of the following. All of it. All of it. He's got to make 5 good friends within 6 months. That's pretty difficult for a new Christian to do. So, who is going to initiate it? Do you think the new Christian who feels out of place, doesn't know anybody, do you think he's going to come up and say, I want to be your friend. I'm Bob Dismuke. I want to go to lunch with you. I want to sit with you. I want you to come back and pick me up and take me to lunch. I want you to pick me up tonight and go to service. Do you think he's going to do that? Who's going to have to do it? Did I push one too many? I've been known to do this. All right. They need to make at least one very good friend. You know, who do we associate with? Most of us associate with members in the church, do we not? My friends are in the church. Their friends are outside of the church. So if they don't develop some friends and one of them become a very good friend, they're most likely not going to continue going there. It's just true. They need to become active in the work of the church. Now, does that mean you're going to have them teaching Bible classes next week after they've just been baptized? Of course not. But there are things they can do. They can be a greeter. You know, you can find things for them to do, and they need to be involved. And if they are, they're more likely to feel like they're needed and want to attend. And of course, they got to learn. That's common sense tells you that. They got to grow in the knowledge. A couple of things that they can do, you can do, have a new Christian class. But you know, there's good and bad about a new Christian class, right? The good thing is that you're teaching them the first principles, some things that they really need to know. What's the bad thing about it? You're isolating them. You're exactly right. There's nobody else except those people that are new Christians. So they need to, you need to, what we do in our new Christian class, and David teaches it, is that everybody else comes in and sits with us, and we sit beside them. My wife's going to be there sitting by one of the new sisters, talking with them, being friendly. That's one of the ways to get around that. it kind of gives them a focal point or reason for coming. It grounds them in the fundamentals, but it does segregate them. And the only people they meet are people that are really immature and not knowledgeable. All right, we have some new Christian programs. And there's a lot of new, there's a lot of systems, a lot of things that you can do. The main thing is you need to be doing something with these new Christians. And we've tried a lot of them, but this one seems to work the best for us. It may not work the best for you. We make sure that we have about 14 different families involved in this. And we make sure that each family takes, well, it goes for 14 months. Now, let me get on down and explain just a little bit. Each month, the family will ensure that a new Christian is at every Bible class. In other words, they kind of adopt this person or maybe this couple. And they're going to make sure, it's their job to make sure that that couple, that new Christian family, or that new Christian person is at every worship. And what you do there is that sometimes you call and say, don't forget, we got class in the morning at 9, and I'm going to be looking for you. Or don't forget, Wednesday night, I'm going to sit with you. I'll be looking for you. So you call. And then if they're not there, you follow up and make sure to find out why they're not there. And you encourage them. But this one family is in charge of this one group. And another thing, what is that doing? They're making a friend. Remember, they've got to have 5 or 6 good friends and one really good friend. So now, this family or this new Christian has now got a couple that they're friends with that's really watching out after them. Sometimes some of these people don't have the transportation, do they? What do you do? Well, we're going to go by and pick you up. We'll be by about 8:45 and make sure we're in time for class. So you pick them up or you call to remind them if they do have the vehicle. And then you make sure that if they're not there, you don't let them fall through the crack. You don't wonder, whatever happened to these people? Haven't seen them here in a month. But you check on them and it makes them feel like they really wanted to be there. All right. By doing that, they rotate through 14 families. So how many friends have they made now? At least 14, because a lot, you know, a man and wife's going to take them, or maybe even got kids. So they meet a lot of people, and out of that 14 families, there's going to be some great friendships developed. That really does work. And you're watching for them when they come in the door to make sure that they have someone to sit with. Nobody likes to sit alone. Nobody wants to sit on a pew and nobody have anything to do with them. You know, I love to go to church because we visit. I see my brothers and sisters, the people that I love, and we talk and we laugh. And these ladies over here had the best time tonight. They were enjoying each other's company. And I like that. And the way you do that is involve a new Christian in that and let them start having that fun, that enjoyment. And they're more likely to stay. It's a proven fact. Sometimes they don't know the way to class. You got to take them. They're new. They don't know. They don't know where the bathrooms are. You know, you got to show them. You may have to show their children where they need to go to class. You know, if the kids don't enjoy coming to church, the parents probably will not stay very faithful. You sit with them. And here's the other thing. These 14 families. If David's a new Christian, and he's under, and I've got him for a month. During that month, I'm going to go up and I'll say, Melly, I want you to meet Dave. You know, he's one of my good friends. Dave is, does such and such, and he teaches a class that you'll really enjoy going to. But I introduced this new Christian to as many people as I can. So now, not only do they meet 14 couples, but they meet all the 14 couples' friends. Pretty soon, that's everybody in the church. You see how it grows and how it works. I went to a congregation for about 6 months before I ever knew who the elders were. Didn't have a clue who the deacons were. Knew the minister because he is up there in front. But that's not right, is it? So you introduce him and say, well, this is one of our elders right here. This is our deacon in charge of evangelism or whatever it might be. They also take them to lunch and dinner after worship. Now, here's something. It's very important to get them involved in your social life. Now, you say, well, I'm not sure I can afford to do that. I've got 4 or 5 kids, and I'm on a limited budget. Our church will pay the bill if you can't afford to do this. Our elders decide that this is important enough that if you can't afford to take this new Christian to lunch during that month, we'll pick up the bill. You just let us know. Nobody has to know about it. But it's important. You think you want to know about that guy's hobbies? Oh, I love to fish. Boy, so do I. Let's go fishing Saturday. You get him involved. Let's go to the ball game. Let's go watch the high school game. These are things that you do to get this person involved. If you will do that, they're more likely to stay involved. If you don't, they're going out the back door, just like David talked about. And then we also have, and the resource section talks about this, we have 14 lessons that we teach them. And sometimes it's right after church, or maybe it's right before Wednesday night. But we teach them a lesson, and it helps them grow. They soon find out that, you know, that so they won't be asking things that we think is funny in class or whatever. I went through that pretty fast. Really what that said is give them a building tour. And that again goes to where the bathrooms are, where the various things in the building would be, because they're new and they don't know.
You're going backwards.
No, I'm not. No. I'm not going backwards. This guy enjoys confusing me. And he I'm not going to say anything about, don't notice that big old coffee stain on his shirt, because he asked me not to. That's going to embarrass David, so. We have something in our church called an activity sheet. And it lists all the different things, teaching, mowing the grass, waiting on the table, being a greeter, everything you could think of that the different activities that needs to be done in the church. And you give them this activity sheet, and you say, hey, fill out whatever you would like to do. We want you involved. If there's something here that you would like to do, put a check mark by it, and we'll try to get you involved. So they fill out, and you make sure that they have this activity sheet, and it's filled out, and then you turn it in. And of course, we feel it's very important that the elders go by and visit. Introduce themselves, welcome him or her. We have a welcome packet. We have passed out. It tells a lot about the church. And it tells them about this new Christian program, what all the things that we're talking to you about. Encourage them to participate. We have visitation teams. I guess just about every congregation does. You have visitation teams, or maybe one night a week or a month or something that you go visit. We have visitation teams. And we have four teams that meet every Sunday after services, and we used to have a potluck, and we have fellowship, and we try to invite any of the new members or any of the visitors, anybody we can, to come eat with us. But we also pass out visitor cards, and these visitor cards may have this new member's name and wife and family, their address. And we'll pass that out, and we want some of our visitation team members to go meet them, introduce themselves, and thank them for coming to services and welcome them. Now they're getting hit up by somebody else. Now, you see how this thing grows? You keep asking people, friends, and everybody else, and they're meeting someone else. We do that about 5 to 8 weeks. We have, like I say, have four of them. And usually we make sure that all four teams have sent someone to go visit this person. So he's going to have met, or she, I keep saying he, but this new Christian is going to have met a number of new people within a very short time. Yes.
I got a question.
Yes.
On that deal there, would you
We go to their house normally sometime during the week. Like, I'm a visitation captain, and I'll pass out a card to visit. This is who I want you to go visit this week, and do it at any time. But you got to turn the card in back before next Sunday so that I know that you made the visit and kind of what kind of luck response you had, and just tell me a little bit of how the visit went. And it's a social deal. And it's one of those deals where you don't go and spend all evening. You don't drop in on somebody and really inconvenience. You just, your wife and I, my wife and I will go and we'll knock on the door and say, hey, we want to introduce ourselves. I know who you are. You're a new Christian at Northwest, but there's so many of us that you don't know all of us. And I just want to make sure that we got a chance to meet you and let you know how proud of you that we are for you obeying the gospel and for you coming and being part of us. And we want you to know if there's anything that we can do to help you in any way, we want to do it. Sometimes you might take them a pie, you know, just something to let them know they're special, because they are. They are. Do you think if you were a visitor, if these things happened to you, do you think that'd make a difference in your life? What about mature Christians? How many of us have ever looked at a church directory that's about 2 or 3 years old and thought, wow, whatever happened to some of these people? I hadn't even seen them in, I can't remember the last time that I saw Johnny and Janie. They just kind of fell through the cracks, haven't they? We don't know what happened. Nobody ever checked on them. And you know what? That's a turnoff for them. Many times we found that, well, evidently I must have not met much of that congregation because no one ever called or checked on me. Maybe I had surgery. Maybe I had and an accident, made that a lot of different things. Nobody checked on me. How can a brother or sister that you love you not check on? We let it happen. So now, we also include in that visitation group people that have not been there for a while. Push way too many of these. We have an anchor team program. David's talking about that lady saying, that is my pew. We all have our places that we sit just about every time we go to church, do we not? We have our pew. So everybody pretty well knows where I sit. I know where David sits on the other side. I know, you know, if somebody says, well, where's so-and-so? Well, I know where they sit. I can walk right to where they are. We have this. Well, we have anchor teams. We have some of our deacons or some of the men that will stand back at the back at service, and they have a certain area of people that they look for. These people are always sitting at that area, so it's very easy. It only takes 30 seconds to see if Johnny and Janie are there. And they make a checklist if for those people that are not attending, that are dropping out. And we try to make sure that no one falls through the cracks. And when a person misses two consecutive weeks, someone needs to find out why. Maybe they're sick. Maybe they need things. But we're going to find out. After missing 3 weeks, we add them to the visitation team, and we visit them twice. Jerry, I don't know. David, I don't know what I'm doing, but I'm not doing it right. Okay. We break it into sections. We make sure that we look for these people to know if they're there, if they're not there. I think I've covered that. Okay, the third level, we have attendance cards every Sunday. And everybody fills out attendance card. And so we can look and see if someone is not attended quite some time, we don't have an attendance card. Then we look on our class attendance roll. So we got about 4 different ways that we look to make sure that no one falls through the cracks. We're talking about the mature Christians now. Fifth level. Our elders have a directory that has everybody's name in it. And they keep a record, kind of know who is not attending very often and who they need to be worried about. And then they themselves will make sure that they get some visits by them also. If they appear to be falling away, then they're going to go visit them and make sure that they let them know that they're missed. This tag system, they might have a blue tag. Maybe this is for like somebody like David and Bob. They don't have to worry much about David and Bob because they know that we're mature, that we've been haven't missed a class in 50 years, so they don't worry too much about us. Then they might have a red tag for people that miss quite often. So they have these tags, and they can. It doesn't take them long to look through and see who is not attending regularly, and who they really need to work on. And then they had these reports by the visitation team that went there and they didn't have a good reason, just have not been able to make it. You know, they come up with all these different reasons why they haven't been there. And so that gives the elders something to work on. Every time the elders meet, which is normally once a week, they go through each category to make sure and follow up so nobody falls through the crack. At that time, they can determine who they need to go visit. Sometimes if someone just missed two or three times, they send a letter. Hey, we've been missing you guys. Want you to know that we look forward to seeing you. Hope you're there. Come back at our next, you know, do whatever it is. And if that letter doesn't work, then the elders go and visit. Actually, what they're really trying to do is break down this pattern of continually missing. So they've had visits by members. They've had a letter by the elders. The elders have gone and checked on them. And hopefully, by doing all these things, that'll stop that continual pattern of missing. Now, you can't save everybody. You can't. There's going to be some that no matter what you do. But we do know that we need to continue to work on and do all we can with those that are missing. David.
The telltale sign of someone who is a mature Christian falling away, the telltale sign is consecutive absences or misses of worship. That is the telltale sign. And that's the reason everything that Northwest is based on are consecutive misses. As elders, there's no way that four or five men can keep track of 200 people. There's no way. At Northwest, there's just no way. But with the help of every member and these programs that we have in place, our elders can keep track of it very easily. And it also makes sure that those who are missing, if someone misses twice consecutively, something's going to happen. It would be wonderful and nice if every single member, and this is something each of us can do, if someone always is sitting next to you and they're not there that Sunday and you don't know where they're at, what is the matter with picking up the phone and calling and saying, Betty, I missed you today. I didn't see you. Or is everything all right? Oh, yeah. Or no, I'm sick. I don't feel well. Was there anything we can do? Can I do whatever? You hang up the phone, and what does Betty think? What a wonderful call. I missed. How many times have you missed and no one's ever called or texted you? How many times have you missed and someone has called and said, hey, I missed you. Is everything all right? Sure. You hang up the phone, and does that make you feel good? It does. What about if you miss two or three or four or five or six times and no one ever calls, no one ever checks, no one ever nothing? It's easy just to slip away, isn't it? And that's what typically happens. And we don't know why. Maybe it's a problem. Maybe they got offended by something somebody said. Who knows? But the key, that's the reason this program is set up the way that it's set up. And it's to keep track and make sure that that happens. Since we've been doing it, our elders can tell you, they can tell us with every member now what their situation is and why they're missing, why they're not missing, and jump on it. And as Bob said, you know, if someone has a mindset to just go back into the world, you know, and turn their back on what they've learned and on God, then there's nothing, you know, you can do. Except for pray for them, you know, really, if you've done all you can do. All right, let's talk about local evangelism now. Tomorrow we're going to be talking about how to effectively sit down and teach someone. And we're going to show you a way that anyone can do it. But in order to teach someone, you have to what? Find that person that's willing to sit down and study with you, right? That's not hard to do. That's really pretty easy. But here are some things that we have at Northwest have done that helps to generate interest from people so that they will want to study. And one of them is to realize that each one of us is responsible for evangelism. Isn't that right? I mean, we all are. And if that be the case, then we should all prepare ourselves to do that and be excited about teaching someone and guiding someone to the truth. We all have different talents, unique maybe of others, and that's the reason that it takes everybody. When we go on campaigns, we take people who are, Bob Morris is 87, knocks doors and teaches studies, and then we take our teenagers, you know, who are members of the church, and everywhere in between, you know. And everybody has their own unique abilities, and it takes everyone. So we all make contributions. Bob, I did what you did.
You need to fix it for you?
Yeah, come on up here. He couldn't fix it if he had to. Okay. 75 to 90% of all members of the church initially study because they had a personal contact with someone. You know, at least we find that to be true. In other words, Bob studied with me because he worked with me, or he knew me, or, you know, I contacted him in some way. He knows me, right? He's comfortable with that. So 75 to 90%. So that tells us that those people that we know, that we have a good influence around, those probably are the first ones that we want to talk to. We have an example of that in the Bible. You know, Andrew brought Peter to Jesus, right? Andrew met Christ, and what did he do? He ran and got Peter, right? All right. We have relationships with people that are outside the church. All of us do, because we work with people, right? And we know people. We go to the grocery store. We go to the, you know, hairdresser, the barber. We go to various sports activities. And we know people that are outside the church. So if we know them, then those are the people that we ask. Now, here is a kind of an interesting fact. And this is a fact, that it generally takes 7 contacts for a person to respond to a request. 7 contacts. So we kind of, at Northwest, we kind of took that idea and thought, you know, if Bob asks me to study the Bible 7 times, I may end up getting really frustrated with him and saying, you know, quit bothering me. But if it's done in a different way, if Bob has an opportunity to approach me 7 times and ask me to study different ways, maybe by different opportunities, then it's not quite so obvious. Here are some examples. Most people stop, by the way, asking after 4 times. All right? In other words, so if most people will say yes at 7, in other words, if I'll say yes at 7 and Bob quits asking me at 4, who wins? I do, right? If Bob would have just figured out a way to ask me 3 more times, his percentages would have gone up, and I'd have probably said okay. All right? Okay, so when visitors at worship service are asked to study the Bible, depending on how they're asked, they will say yes. I used to be really thrown back on how to ask people to study the Bible that came to services. I, you know, it's easy to go up and introduce yourself and say, I'm so-and-so, you know, glad you're here. Would you like to study the Bible? I mean, that's just a little bit, just like too quick, right? At least it was for me. The responses were always no, or maybe later, or whatever. And one day, someone handed me a card. It might have been Bob, you know, a visitor card, said, you know, meaning talk to them, introduce yourself to them, they're visitors. And they had marked on the card, one of the boxes, I'd be interested in a Bible study. I thought, boy, now here's a good one, you know. But I was still uncomfortable asking. So after services, I walk up to them and I introduce myself, and I said, I'm David, and we're really glad you're here. And I got their name, and I don't know why I asked them this, but I said, is this the first time for you to visit our services? They said yes. And then I said, well, we're really glad you're here. You may have seen, you know, some things that you have some questions about. We have a Bible study that answers these questions as to why we do things. When would be a good time for you to study? Would you like to do that? You know what they said? Yeah. Well, I didn't know what to say after that, you know. But they did, and so I kind of perfected that a little bit, and that's what I did. I couldn't wait for the next Sunday, because I thought, I'm going to find me another one. And not everybody responded that way. Some said, well, yeah, but I never got a negative response, ever. It was always, well, yeah, that would be, you know, good, but I don't know when I could. Some I couldn't nail down as a time. Others I could, way better than just asking them. So anyway, that's what I do. But anyway, people who are there at services probably have a much higher percentage of saying yes because they're there, right? I mean, they came for some reason, you know. So if they walked in and visited, you know, ask them. A lot of them will say that they'll study with you. We've already covered that, you know, about, I don't know why that slide's in there, to tell you the truth right at that point. One of the things that we did at Northwest to get everybody involved in asking someone to study or to get people their heightened awareness, you know, about coming so they can study is we had quarterly, what we call quarterly events. And in these quarterly events, we would have a guest speaker. We would find somebody, you know, that could speak on the home or something that would be a pretty interesting topic that generally would cover a lot of you know, interest in the community, biblical topics to the community. And then each member would ask or they would submit names of their friends. And we had pages, you know, their name, address, you know, and it was okay to contact them. And they would submit those names. We gave them, what, a couple of 3 weeks or something like that to turn them all in. And they just write them on a piece of paper, and then they would turn them in. And then what we did was we sent each one of these people that they turned in an invitation to come, you know, to this meeting that we were going to have. And we were going to feed them lunch, and then we were going to have a, you know, this guest speaker, you know, so we sent them an invitation. But we didn't just stop there. This is what we sent them, was a brochure, an invitation here. And let me get down here. So the elders then, what they did was they took and they wrote a letter, invited them again. Well, that was the second invitation. And then the member who gave us their name, they said, hey, by the way, when they'd see him at work or whatever, you're going to get an invitation from our congregation because I turned your name in to invite you. And by the way, well, I'd really like to have you come. You know, you think you could come? See, so that was like the third or the fourth. And then we had, we did a door knocking. And you're going to think this is way overkill. But this happened over the course of several weeks. We took these same people and we would, we gave them their names to our members who would go knock their door, and they'd go knock their door and they would say, I'm David Sexton, that's my wife Carolyn, and we're from Northwest Church of Christ, and we're here to ask you to come, give you a personal invitation to our meeting. And we'd show them the brochure, and we're here on behalf of Bob Dismuke. You know Bob Dismuke, right? Oh yeah, that dirty rat, we know him, you know. But no, it was really, really positive. You know, so the first one that we did, we had a lot of people come. You know, a lot more than you just normally would. You know, so anyway, we did four of those in a year, and that's pretty labor intensive. It really is when you're doing a lot. So we did that. And probably the very best result, the very best thing that came out of it was we had the majority of our congregation, which was, you know, quite a few folks, was completely involved in that. Completely. You know, which was a really good thing. Okay? So anyway, this is what we did. This are some of the other things. Y'all know what the house to house and heart to heart is? We mailed that. That was another invitation. So we gave them, we did a lot of things and repeated the process. quarter events, and it worked out really nice. You know, that was probably one of the best things that we did in terms of creating interest in the community to get people to come. Because if we could get them to the building, you know, we knew we could probably set up quite a few studies. And when they came, we did. We set up, you know, quite a few studies at that time. All right. I had to blast through all that. Okay. When you ask people to come to worship, how many of you ever asked people to come? That's a really good thing, is to ask them to come. We have a brochure, and we give that, and we tell them, you know, that we have nursery, and we have all, but just to ask them to come, and you got all kinds of people that you ask, you know, people that you know personally, people that you have business acquaintances with. Don't be afraid to ask them. Just ask them to come, because if you ask them to come, maybe someone else will ask them to study, right? And that's what we do at Northwest. A lot of times, as they come, we ask them to study. So these are different ones, you know, people who handle lawn care, pest control. These are just ideas. People that live next door to you. How many of you have gone down your street and kind of around the block and knocked on everybody's door and asked them to come? Tell them where you attend and ask them to come. Have y'all ever done that? Why not? You know, that's a good way to do it, right? You get to know who your neighbor is, and you ask them to attend. At least let them know. Okay? One of the other things that we, I'm not sure, I don't think we did this. This is something that's in the packet. But it was very successful at other places. And that's this newsletter evangelism. Have y'all ever heard of that? Okay. You take a letter, a newsletter, and, well, here, let me just follow this. It's like a paper route. You pass out a series of about 25 newsletters to homes in your area, just around, kind of around in your area. And these newsletters are different. And every week, you pass them out, and they get a different one every week. And you do that for about 3 months, just like a paper route. You don't knock on their door. You don't introduce yourself. You just leave it. Just leave it. And somebody's taking that off the door, right? And they're reading it. And the people get to know about the congregation and all that. And very few people, if any, call and say, hey, don't leave me this stuff anymore, for one reason or the other. But anyway, it makes a favorable impression of the church. And then their doors are knocked, you know, and they're visited and they're invited personally. Say, I'm the one that's been leaving that, you know, that you've been getting. And they kind of feel like they know you. This method has been used, and it's in your packet. We've just got so many different methods that we use at Northwest. This is on the plate to do. We just haven't done it yet. So maybe if you did it, you could tell us how you did. The percentage of people who'll study go as high as 25%. That's pretty high, you know. So, you know, based on what has been done in the past by this other congregation that's in this resource guide, you know, it's probably be worth, you know, checking into.
Okay. How many salespeople do we have in here? People in sales? No one? Am I the only person? I have an insurance agent in real estate. If somebody told me no, they did not want to buy a house, or no, they did not want to buy an insurance policy, and I just dropped it at that, I'd starve to death. Talks about that seven times. Some years ago, I'd never heard about that seven times principle. I'd never heard of it. But I started deciding, I'm going to make me a list of people that I think are pretty good prospects, and I'm going to contact them about once a month for a year. That's 12 times. And I sent them out little newsletters. I sent them out brochures. I sent them out letters. I did all this stuff, and I kept a record of it. My sales went up. Now, I didn't get them all, but I went up over 40% because I kept on keeping on. Now, if this will work in my private business, why wouldn't it work in the church? This newspaper evangelism Dave is talking about, I've talked to some people that have done that. I'm the deacon in charge of evangelism at Northwest. And we've got our, sometimes I worry about maybe having our members do too much. And so I have to be careful about not just burning them out. But that's on the burner. That's one thing. And I've done quite a bit of research on it. And it's a person who just picks a block or so around his house. That's not too much, is it? I can knock these two dozen doors around my neighborhood. And the results have been great from what I've heard. So that's, as David said, that is on the burner. Now, I do something similar to that. How many know about a house-to-house, heart-to-heart? You've seen that. I think it's probably one of the best publications that I have seen. I love that. I picked out an area about a 1 mile square around the church building. And the publishers will mail that out for me. All I've got to do is just give them the address or the zip code is what it is. And they mail that out. And I decided that I'm going to send it to all these people for 2 years because it comes out quarterly, I think. For 2 years, sent that out. And then we're door knocking on that area. And you know what kind of response? Oh, you're the guys that sent me that magazine. I love that magazine. It's great results. If you're not doing that, that's a great prospecting tool. House to house, heart to heart. Or you can just take it and hand it out. That could be one of those things that you do. But we found out that we've taken this 1 mile area. We've knocked their door, and maybe we'll have 8 or 10 people that want to be baptized on want to study on a Saturday's door knocking, about half a day. And then you know what? About 6 months later, we'll knock those same houses again. What, Bob, what's the, you've already been turned down there once. Why would you do it again? The more you contact people, the more they know about you, the better your results. You would think after doing it the third time, our results would dwindle, would you not? It goes up. It goes up. Of course, you got people moving in. You get a few new people. But the more people hear about you, the more you ask them, the better your results are going to be. So that's how that newspaper evangelism works. It's something we're doing something what, but like it, but not exactly. Door knocking. You know what? People tell me today that door knocking does not work. I hear it all the time. Door knocking does not work. People will not respond to your door knocking. They haven't been with us because we door knock. We're going to San Angelo, Texas, the last of May, and we're going to spend a week, and we're going to have 7 teams of 15 people knocking. And we're going to knock as many doors as we can in 1 week. And I bet you we baptize 40 to 50 people. We knocked on a door, Mount Pleasant, Texas. Little old lady come to the door. We told her what we wanted to do. We wanted to study the Bible with her. She said, I've been waiting on you all my life. There's people here that's been waiting on you all their life. And if you don't knock their door, they're going to be lost, most likely. That's sad. Have you ever thought about all the lost opportunities that you have? You know, I worry that God's going to hold me responsible for these. Have you ever worried about Judgment Day, about what your neighbor, maybe a kinfolk, someone you work, and they say, you never mentioned him to me. You never mentioned him to me. Their soul is lost, and most likely yours is also, because you never mentioned him to me. Evangelism is important, people. That's what we're trying to say. That's why we're here today. Jesus came to this earth to seek and save the lost. He didn't come to give everybody a better house, more food, or anything else. He came to seek and save the lost. He's the head of the church. We're the body. The body does what the head tells it to do. When it says, go ye and teach all nations, who's he talking about? Who's he talking to? Door knocking works. We've been doing it. Oh, good grief. All right, David, what you do? What do you do to get this all messed up? We found that when we knock doors, about 1 out of 40 people will schedule a Bible study. 1 out of 40. You think, well, that's not very many. I got to ask a lot of people to get one Bible study. What if you didn't ask those 140? How many people would you get? None. We find out that not every one of those 40 will show up for their study. Only about 1 out of 3 does. Wow, now, Bob, your odds are going down. Door knocking doesn't work. When you study with them, only about half of them will obey the gospel. But we average over 30. We average over 30. Usually we have 5 teams. This year we have 7 teams. So we have more people knocking. People will obey. But you know what? Let me say this. Every time I go on a campaign and people will say, how many people were baptized, Bob? Did you have a great campaign? I say, yeah, we had a great campaign. You can have a great campaign, or you can have a great door knocking Saturday and not have anybody. Study the Bible, obey the gospel, tell you yes. Why? Why can it be great? Because you're doing what you've been commanded to do. You're saving your own soul. You're commanded to do this. This campaign is designed to give as many people as we can to the opportunity to obey the gospel, to learn what they got to do to be saved. Not everybody obeys. Sometimes you just shake the dust off your feet and keep going on. But it gives us a chance to fulfill the commandment of the Great Commission to go ye and teach all nations. We knock doors. We ask the residents to attend the meeting because we're having a meeting that week. We ask them to come attend and attend church. But we also ask them to do a home Bible study. And David's going to talk a lot about that tomorrow. So I don't want to get into that. But to do a home Bible study. And people will say yes. There's a lot of people that have been waiting on you all their life to study the Bible. We call this the safety chain method. And David's going to teach that to you tomorrow. You know, as members of the church, many of us know what the gospel plan of salvation is. But many of us don't have a really good method, a good way of teaching people. Now, some of you do. I was a deacon for and taught classes, taught auditory, did everything in the world, visited, did all those things. But when it come down to somebody wanting to study, do you know what I would do? I'd go get the preacher to do it because I didn't have a method. I was afraid I'd do something that might hurt the cause or not do the right thing. So I'd set the preacher up. Let the preacher do this. I was 50 years old before I learned this method. I'm over 53. Somebody said I was 53. I'm over 53. But I was 50 years of age before I learned this method. I wasted all those years because I did not have a good method. This method is the simplest, easiest method. And I don't care what method you use. Use any method you want as long as you're using it. And tomorrow I want you to come. I want you to learn this method. And if you like yours better, use yours or use parts of this. But come. It's very important. This is the simplest thing. And I guarantee you, David and 2 hours can have the youngest Christian in here being able to teach anybody what they need to do to be saved. I promise you. It's very effective for us. We have a CD about it. It's called Evangelizing Your Community. It's in the back of the book, page 7. Those are some of the things that's on that sheet back. There's some of the things that we talked about. If you know others that would like Dave and I to come talk to you, other congregations, we love to do this, and we're certainly willing to do it. Give them our name, our number. We'll be glad to do it. Our only thing is we want it to be a spiritual congregation, one that is, you know, not a liberal church. We don't want to go make someone a better congregation that is not spiritual. But we'd be glad to do it. If you have friends or someone's in any other area that might be interested, have them contact us. I did it again, Dave. I did one time.
That pretty much concludes what we wanted to cover tonight. Tomorrow, you will learn the method that we use and that we've used for several years. If you can, and hopefully everyone here, and I'm assuming probably everyone here will be there tomorrow, but really we want to encourage everybody that possibly can to come. Because honestly, and this sounds like it's oversimplifying it, but I promise you it's not. If you can read a scripture, ask a question that you have written in your margin, and turn to the next page that you have written in your margin, which is a reference to another scripture, and you can do that in sequence over and over, you can teach this method and you can be successful. The reason this method works so well is because it's short, it's scriptural, it's simple, and it's systematic. And that's the reason it works so well. The reason that I never taught anybody was because I was afraid I didn't know enough. How many of you feel that way? Yeah. But the truth of the matter is, you know enough. If you didn't know anything except for the fact that why you became a Christian and how you became a Christian, that's enough. But what we mean when we say we don't know enough, and that is to combat these questions and these debates and the denominational doctrine that's false doctrine, how to combat that, because it always gets thrown up, right? It always, well, what about this? Well, what about this? You know, well, what about this? Right? So we don't feel qualified to cover that. I promise you, tomorrow when we cover this, you're going to learn how to overcome that. And the reason this method works so well, I'll tell you a story because I won't have time to tell it tomorrow. Bob and I could sit and tell you stories that would just get you so excited that you just couldn't sit still. But this is one of my favorite ones right here because it's personal. It happened to me, and I've got others I could tell you. This is probably my most compelling that keeps me doing what I'm doing. We had a member of the church where we go, came up to me, and she said, my husband, he's in Iraq. I think it was Iraq. Anyway, Iran or Iraq. He's military. And he's coming back to, you know, he's coming back for 2 weeks. And he said he would go to church with me, but I'm not sure that he will. And he's told me to quit asking him, but when he comes to church with me, would you please, 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 that's what she said, ask him to study. Because I think he'll study if you ask him. I didn't know who he was. I said, well, what am I going to say? No, I won't ask him. So I said, sure. Thinking probably he wouldn't come. Well, a couple of weeks had time gone by, and I'd forgotten about it. And one Sunday morning, after Bible class, she comes running up, and she says, David, he's here. He's jumping up and down. I'm like, what are you talking about? And then she told me, Paul's here. My husband's here. Can you ask him to study after church? I said, sure, I'll ask him. So after services, I go up to him with Carla, his wife, and my wife, and introduce myself. And Carla, you know, she's so sweet. We're glad she's here. Your children are so sweet. And boy, he's just stoic, you know. Y'all know what that means, stoic? Scary stoic, because his shoulders are this broad. He's about this tall. His shoulders about this broad. His arms are that. I'm not exaggerating. He's a huge, big guy. And he's just looking at me and not almost with no expression, and I don't know what he's going to do, slap me or kiss me. I didn't know. But I asked him, I said, you know, Carla means so much to us here, and I didn't know how to ask this guy, but I said, she's asked me to ask you to study the Bible while you're here because she cares about you. Would you do that? Take about an hour and a half. He said, okay. I looked at Carla and I said, great. I said, when can we do it? She said, well, how about tonight, you know, after services? I said, okay. And I said, that good with you, Paul? And he said, yep. So anyway, that's what we did. So we sat in, we got a card table, and we sat there at the church building in our library. And he sat here, I sat here, she sat over here, and my wife sits over here. And you're going to understand why. So we go through this chain. And we start going through it. We get to a certain part. I ask him if he's been saved. By the way, he doesn't use our Bibles. He's not like the typical person that doesn't know where things are. I know it's in there, but I can't find it. He brought his Bible. It was that thick, Old and New Testament, King James Version, worn out. You know, he could go to the Scriptures faster than I could, and I had the page numbers on mine. Seriously. And everything, when we went through these Scriptures, everything, every question I asked him, he was right on the money. Well, I asked him, have you been saved? And he said, sure, I've been saved. I said, well, can you tell me about it? And he told me about it. The bottom line was, his grandfather was a Baptist preacher who raised him, who at a certain age taught him. And here's what he told me. He said, one day, he said, I will never forget this. He said, he took me out into the country. We went up on the side of a mountain. He opened the Bible. He began to read to me, and I was saved. That's what he told me. He prayed. We prayed. We shared tears, and I was saved. This is what he said. And I'm sitting here thinking, all while he's talking about this, that when we get into these Scriptures on, because he knows the Bible, very smart man, he's going to realize, you know, that his grandfather, he's either going to stop being an honest man, or he's going to realize that he was taught error. Either way, he loses, because his grandfather's passed away, and his grandfather didn't believe this, and he's got a choice to make. Well, we got to that point, and I dreaded it so bad because I didn't know what was going to happen. Anyway, we got to that point. When we get to this tomorrow, it's all gonna go, wow, boom, I remember what David said about that, and I can see this. Anyway, we got to that point, and I asked him to respond after reading the Scriptures, after him realizing, you know, that that's not what he did. His answers, by the way, which were real quick at the beginning of the study, when we got into the Scriptures on baptism, they started getting much slower, much more deliberate, much slower, till finally we read the last one, and I asked him if he would like to do as Paul, the apostle, and get up right now and go be baptized and have your sins washed away. That's what I asked him, right there. He didn't say nothing. Nothing. He just sat there. He didn't look at me. He looked straight at the table. He didn't say nothing. And I look at Carla, and her mouth goes boink, like she's going to open, and I, you know, don't say anything. So she closed her mouth, and he sat there. I didn't say nothing. Carla didn't say nothing. My wife didn't say nothing. It was dead silence. I don't know how long, but it felt like 10 minutes. And all of a sudden, his arm starts shaking. And then his leg starts shaking. And then the card table starts doing this on the floor, because he's got a hold of the card table, and he's shaking. I'm not kidding. I'm getting scared because he's sitting right here. And all of a sudden, he stands up, and he said he wanted to be baptized. It wasn't me that did it. It was this chain of Scriptures. And he saw it because it started here, and in a few minutes it ended here, and he didn't have time to get confused in between and outthink himself, see? He had to make a decision. And he was an honest man, see? He, regardless of what his grandfather taught him, none of that ever came up. It could have, and I'll tell you tomorrow how to overcome that thing. But it didn't. And as a result of him studying, the power of the gospel saved that man. See? The blood of Christ through the power of the gospel, he will be in heaven someday. See? Of course, Carla was beside herself, you know. And now that family, I don't know what will happen to that family. But they had children. They've moved away now. He's in the military, you know. But they're a Christian family, all thinking the same way. When we teach you this method, as Bob said, it's not the only method in the world. But for almost 40 years, I've been teaching this method myself. I've been teaching others to teach it. And I've never seen a method that's as simple as this one that anybody in the world can teach. We've had new converts that we have taught this method. They've obeyed the gospel with this method. And they've said, now let me have a Bible, let me mark it, and let me go teach my friends. And they've done that and brought them in during the campaign and baptized them. You see? Well, tomorrow Bob is going to preach. And he's going to preach and he's going to teach your Bible class. And I'm going to do the workshop. And it will be a very good day. I promise you. Thank y'all so much for your attention.
Let me tell a story. David said we have a million of them. And as we said, not everybody obeys the gospel when we teach them. I was at the back of the auditorium one Wednesday night and looking for visitors and a family come in. And I introduced myself and they introduced themselves and they said, don't you guys have an attorney that attends at this church? And at that time we had a judge and his name was Roy Moore. And he's the one that started this chain in Lawton 38 years ago. But anyhow, I said, well, we got a judge. He used to be an attorney. His name is Roy Moore. Roy Moore, that's it. I remember now. He said, 20 years ago, he came to Carthage, Missouri. And I was a young policeman, not married. And he taught me the gospel. And I didn't obey. And a few years later, we got married, and my wife and I had some children. They started getting up a little bit older, and my wife said, you know what? We really need to get our kids in Sunday school. They need to be attending church. He said, well, I know exactly where to go. I know what the one true church is. We're going to attend the Lord's Church, the Church of Christ. So they did. They were baptized. His kids got older. They were baptized, and he was a deacon. 20 years later, that meant so much to him. He came back and he said, I want to meet the man that taught me the gospel of Christ. Changed my life. And he never knows what it did to me because he left and I didn't obey the gospel. We could go on and know and tell stories all night. And I've got some great ones. I wish I could keep on telling stories. But the point of it is, when you evangelize, you never know how much good you've done this side of heaven. We'll never know till we get to heaven. And sometimes a no is not always a no. Okay? But remember, you're doing what you've been commanded to do. Thank you guys for being here tonight. Thank you for having us. We had more fun than y'all did, I promise you.